This is 10 Minutes of Science, a Women in Ophthalmology initiative supported by Johnson & Johnson. We have invited ophthalmologists who are leaders in their field to discuss a journal article of their choice. My name is Robin Troutbeck. I'd like to introduce Dr. Kerry Meads. She brings with her a wealth of experience. She is a pioneer of laser cataract surgery and was the first ophthalmologist to perform intracor in Australasia. Kerry Meads is the founding director of Personalize. She was the first female ophthalmologist to perform laser vision correction in Australia, and her expertise in refractive surgery is internationally recognised. Welcome, Kerry.
Thank you very much for asking me, Robin. It's been a privilege to be part of this podcast series.
Can you begin by telling us the name of your article, Kerry, and why you chose it?
Yeah, I chose the article Factors Affecting Corneal Incision Position During Femtosecond Laser Assisted Cataract Surgery. And I chose this. I know it's a fairly niche market, but we were having trouble with the incisions. We've done laser cataract, or we installed our first laser cataract in 2011. So we've had quite a bit of experience with laser cataract. But the secondary incisions we were putting in seemed to be too far into the cornea and therefore affecting your view when you're doing the cataract surgery, and sometimes difficult to open, which kind of was sad because, you know, we were wanting to do a non-blade procedure, and suddenly we were back to using the blade.
Yep. So do you normally do one or two paracenteses?
I normally do one, but you can tell in this paper that obviously Chandra does two. But, yeah, I normally do one. It's always with the left hand, so it's superior with the right eye and inferior with the left eye, yeah. I do a corneal-based incision, and I do topical, almost always topical cataract surgery, yeah.
So that was the question you really wanted to have answered. Why did the laser sometimes make these incisions more anterior and therefore making it difficult, as you said, the view more difficult, and I suppose manipulation more difficult with the second instrument?
Everything, yes.
Have to get out, okay.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah, it was more central, the paracentesis, yes. and sometimes it wasn't through, and we were surprised at that. You know, we're considering the incision, the precision of this kind of technology.
Yes,
we were surprised we weren't getting the incisions that we wanted,
and that didn't tend to happen with the main wound.
No, nowhere near as much with them. Well, not at all, really, with the main wound. No, place it temporary, like Chandra, and no, we weren't having trouble with that. But once you'd resorted to a blade, you kind of felt you'd let yourself down, you know, and that was annoying from the point of view of laser cataract surgery. Mm.
The position of the paracentesis and making it more central like that, would it have any effect on like astigmatism postoperatively or anything? Like it's more just the intraoperative component of the placement that's the issue?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't know about you, but where I put that paracentesis was critical to disassembling the nucleus, which, yes, of course, was disassembled already partly by the laser. But, you know, it's critical that all that positioning, that you have the right angle to crack that nucleus. And if it wasn't in the right position, it was a lot harder. You were, particularly if it was more central, because you had a more vertical approach cracking that nucleus. And that's a really annoying. It's also very annoying if it isn't complete, you know, if you're coming out in the stroma of the cornea, because, you're frustrated, you think, femtosecond incisions are a little bit like, I always say, they're a little bit like Velcro. You know, they're not like a blade incision. And you wanted, you wondered whether it was the fact you weren't getting the plane that you wanted, or getting, the amount of femtosecond energy, all that kind of thing. But in actual fact, the incision wasn't completely through the cornea, even though it's programmed to be. into the anterior chamber, and more than anterior chamber, 120%, you know, through the cornea. Yep. So
it should easily, in theory, should easily get through. So yes, I suppose the really exciting question is, what did you find? What did you find a reason as to why this was happening with the laser?
Well, as you can tell from the article, and as I say, there's a lot of maths there. Yes. You know, Chandra was looking at tilt and displacement, eccentric placement of the laser on the eye, and you know, it was really that we felt that the program that the laser that we had programmed in was not being translated into the actual incisions. And of course, this is what the paper shows, is that as you got tilt or displacement, you didn't actually, that it didn't translate, that the laser program that you had put in actually were the incisions that you got. In actual fact, the inferior incision was always slightly more central than what you had programmed in. And of course, he measures where that is for his two paracentesis incisions. So, you know, his main conclusion about this paper was that those paracentesis incisions are not programmed with an OCT. It assumes a lot of things when you're putting that those incisions in, and obviously, that is not good enough. Now, he felt that you could create an algorithm to solve that problem, but his main conclusion was that you really needed OCT guidance for the secondary incision, like you have for the primary incision.
So, when you talked about just briefly about the tilt, is that just the tilt of the patient's eye as the, like, can you just talk us through or talk me through how, like, so the problem was the docking? Was that part of the issue? Of
very much so. I don't know whether you've done laser cataract, Robin, but no. The docking is very important.
Yes.
You need the patient's eye flat. You obviously, there is, because they're nervous and because the laser part is usually done not in theatre, in another room, and yeah, they've not got sedation on board, or they've only got topical anesthesia, they tend to, of course, roll the eye up.
Bells
is a big part of it, yeah. And so the tilt was usually, you know, superior. And that, of course, meant that when your planned incisions were not where you wanted them to be, eccentric placement of the the contact lens and the cone on the patient's eye is also not uncommon. I mean, orbits are a funny shape sometimes, particularly, men with very large brows, that kind of thing. And, your position of your docking may not have been where the limbus was, definitely over the interface of the contact lens. So it is, it's hard to put all those factors together in really a relatively short period of time. I mean, you must make this part of the procedure fairly short for most patients because, as I say, you don't have sedation on board.
Yes.
So if you can't get a perfect docking, your incisions are going to, your paracentesis incisions may interfere with the next part of your procedure, which, of course, you know, is probably the most important part. Although I do say to patients, we've broken up your cataract, now we're going to put the lens in theatre, you know, and
that docking in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what can you do to decrease this? So you said it wasn't as easy. You couldn't just mathematically change an algorithm. It depends on all these other factors, the tilt and the docking, the way the patient's eye is positioned.
So yeah, I went away from using the laser for the incisions.
What happened. Solve the problem.
Not really, no. Okay. I couldn't, You know, Chandra was obviously putting a lot of pressure on the company, particularly LensEssex, to solve that problem for him. But it just seemed at this point in femtosecond laser cataract surgery history that if you wanted a procedure that didn't have that frustrating thing that you were in the wrong position with your paracentesis and you weren't through the cornea, that, you know, if you wanted the whole thing to run very quickly, and I find your best to have cataract surgeries run as smoothly and as quickly as you possibly can, because particularly if you're doing it for refractive purposes, you're mainly doing a lens exchange and you want everything to run, you know, fairly quickly. So to be in the frustrating position that you're sorting these incisions out without that OCT guidance, I think is probably a choice I had to make.
Okay. So So is there anything, any other conclusions from the article, or is there something else that we can all take from it, we can all learn from?
I think there's a lot to learn with the technology. You know, I find the technology fascinating, as you could imagine, because there's a lot of technology in refractive surgery, and I find femtosecond lasers fascinating, and I've, you know, how much they have come, you know, from making flaps now to smile and all the other things that they can do. And I've used the Victus, which did both cataracts and flaps, and the Zima, which, you know, was more portable and used in theatre for cataract surgery. I've used quite a few of the different machines. And I just think it's important to know what that machine does and what that laser technology does. It's obviously, it's like any technology, and this technology that we're using, It's a project in progress, you know, and I think your familiarity with that progress is very important. You know, I think you need to be up on what the technology can do.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're using it, you've got to know everything about it.
I think if you're doing cataract surgery, you've got to know, it's got to be part of your armamentarium. You know, it's got to be, there's got to be you've got to have that broad range of knowing its capabilities. And although it might not stop there, I mean, I obviously came from intracat surgery to extracat surgery to phaco and then the laser cataract, you know, it's a journey, you know, and you're on that journey and you want to see where that journey goes, even if it comes to, you know, a dead end at some in some places. It's important to be on that journey.
Thank you, Kerry.
I'd like to thank Robin and Helen for their contribution to Women in Ophthalmology. I think they're doing a fantastic job, and thank you very much for being part of this podcast.
Thank you for joining us today on 10 Minutes of Science. See you next time.